Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up, sir.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. Yes, yes, you are now talking with TD. Hey, man, say what? 20 to 12. We're going to get into it. Appreciate each of you for tuning in. Week two, there's a lot to talk about. We got Sarah Barshup, ESPN NFL Nation Rams reporter, coming on to tell us a little bit about Matthew Stafford and that interior offensive line. Well, I tell you what, if I'm Jeffrey Simmons, I'm licking my chops. Tavondre Sweat, too. So we'll get into that. We got some things to go over on Run TMC with Chris Sanders. But I want to start out with Parker Kelly, my quarterback, and we're going to get into this Cam Ward situation. Tell me this, Parker, as we welcome you in. I know the stats may tell you one thing, but what does the overall game tell you about Cam Ward after you watched it?
Well, you can't be a box score watcher. That's for one.
Yeah.
Second, I thought he played well. I don't think he played great. I don't think he played bad. I thought he played on time. He looked very poised, but that's something we already knew coming out of college, that he's able to never get too high, never get too low. Mm-hmm. I thought the control of the offense as a rookie looked incredible. He made a couple checks at the line of scrimmage, which I thought was really impressive. Callahan talked about how he's earned the right to be able to do that. So all three of those things were really on display. I thought he had great anticipation of throwing guys open, throwing out of the break, and that led to some of the drops because maybe the receivers weren't expecting it. So that's what I took away.
You are on to something. Because I tell you, I talked to four or five different receivers in the last couple of days, and that's kind of been the main thing. Calvin Ridley, you know, Calvin's Calvin. Like, he's like, hey, man, like, no excuses. I dropped the ball. I should have caught it. But to your point, though, especially talking to Alec Iremanner, I really like him, man. Let me say that first. I like his energy. He's fun to talk to. But we were discussing how the arm angles, as a receiver, you know, you're used to the being able to track it. You know, when it comes out the quarterback's hands, you track it and everything. He was saying how there were times in the game where he's like, that ball is not going to come to me because I don't. And then next thing you know, he'll see the hand to the side or whatever, and the ball's coming. He's like, I got to catch it. You know, and I think that's what happened to Chig on that seam, the little bend route he ran.
100%.
Yeah. I'm not sure what happened to Ridley on the play before that, but is that something you say 100%, so I'm guessing you noticed that.
Yo, the one with Chig, I didn't expect any player to make that catch because it came on him really fast. Like, as soon as he turned his head, that ball was there. The one with Calvin, though, that hit him right in the hands. Yeah. So you're expected to make the catch. But with Chig, I mean, the second he turned his head, I mean, the ball was already on him. So maybe a little bit too much anticipation from Cam right there. But for the most part, it was pretty good.
Well, I mean, Iremanner said it early, right? Remember that first week at camp? He was like, hey, if you're not on time with Cam, like he's always on time. So you always have to be ready. So that's an example. It's unfortunate, right? Because the guys didn't do him any favors. I think that throw that you mentioned, even though it was hot and it was right on him, it almost had to be, right? Because you got to make that throw, that little hole, that honey hole, you know, right in between you as you get beyond that second-level defender and before the safety could come, you got to get the ball there. So I think that was good. When you talk about the checks, I'm glad you mentioned that because I asked Callahan about his assessment of Ward's performance and the ability to make checks, you know, and he's – outside of the throws, he said that perhaps his favorite thing was the last play of the game where they had a max pressure on and Cam checked it. Now, obviously, you know, the nickel corner was able to still get in there, but to see that and check it, you know, in that situation, I thought was pretty good.
Yeah, and I think that just shows that this team is still very young. They're still starting from the ground up because Cam made the right check, but they just didn't pick it up. Yeah. So that wasn't necessarily Cam's fault. That was more so the protection. He made the right call, so that's a positive. And people look at that and could maybe trash Cam for that, but when they actually talk to the coaches, talk to the players, realize, hey, that wasn't Cam's fault. He made the right protection.
Right.
They just didn't pick it up.
Yeah, they didn't pick it up. And that's what Nick Holt said. It's almost like you're speaking right in conjunction with what these coaches are saying. And he talked about, hey, look, it's not just on Cam. You know, this is a young team. Nick Holt said this. He said, you know, and there are other young guys who have to be on the same page too. And they have to also execute. And that didn't happen on that particular play. So you're on it with that. Daniel Moore Jr. All right. Help me out. Let's talk about this, right? So I'm not a pocket watcher, but let's keep it 100. He signed a very high value contract, right? So when you go against another high value player, I don't think it should be that much of a mismatch. And look, don't get it twisted. Like, Daniel Moore is a cool guy. But you got to do more than be cool. You got to protect your quarterback. Brian Callahan said, hey, those guys, he gets paid a lot of money to do that. Talking about Nick Bonito. And he said, you know, sometimes it's going to happen. And yeah, sometimes it's going to happen. But I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong, but Bonito kind of ate his lunch, huh?
Yeah. And by no means do I think Dan Moore is an elite left tackle at right. all. But if I'm paying top dollar for a service, I expect it to work properly.
Yeah.
And he is going to get beat. He got beat a lot in Pittsburgh, and he's going up against guys like Trey Hendrickson, Miles Garrett, guys like that. But in this Broncos defense is very good. The pass rush is very good. But you can't keep getting beat consistently like he was on Sunday. That's a problem.
Yeah, that is a definite problem. So I would like to see that get fixed. It's going to be tough for Cam Ward to do anything if, you know, the blind side, so to speak, isn't protected. But you want to be protected on both sides, right? And that being said, you look at J.C. Latham, and he has an injury he's dealing with. What were your thoughts on Ali Udo coming in while Latham was out?
I got nervous. If I'm calling it spade a spade, if I'm keeping it 100, I saw him come to the game and I got really tight. My stomach, it got, because I know that depth at tackle has been a concern for this team for a long time. You're moving J.C. Latham over to the right side, his most comfortable position. He goes down with an injury, and I had high hopes for this offensive line if they're able to stay healthy and the continuity they're able to develop over the course of a season, and boom, your right tackle goes down in week one, and I saw the backup trot in. I'm like, oh boy. He looked fine against backups in the preseason, but what is he going to look like thrown into the fire in Mile High, week one, you're on the road against one of the best pass rushes in the NFL. And we saw how that played out.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think you saw how it played out. So, what's the answer? Prayer.
See, I'm speechless right now. Prayer is about the only thing that can help this offensive line as of right now if they're not healthy.
So, do you think that puts them back in a situation where the play sheet is limited?
I would say so, because if your front side's not getting protected and can't, here's probably what you're going to have to do is you're going to have plays in there where Cam gets the ball out of his hand quickly, and you can't have long developing play action. You probably won't be able to do any of that if J.C. Latham's not in the game. So yeah, that definitely limits the playbook.
And that's what I was getting at, the elimination of those plays. Another way to offset it is running the football. But what are your thoughts? Were they too predictable on first? Because, you know, Brian Callahan, he says, hey, man, you know, we're facing too many third and longs. Well, a lot of those third and longs are because you didn't get anything on first down and second down running the football. Or, you know, you ran the football on first down, you attempted a pass on second, and you were sacked or whatever, you know. So what are your thoughts on that?
I never really want to bash a play caller because I'm not an offensive coordinator in the NFL. I'm not qualified to do it, but it was very predictable. It was run pass a lot of the times, and you could see it coming from a mile away, and that hurt the team. Obviously, Callahan's getting bashed for a lot of other things right now, But I feel like that's another thing that hurt this team on Sunday was predictable play calling. And when you have a defensive coordinator like Vance Joseph, who is very, very good at what he does, it just makes it hard for your team to really do anything. And clearly the offense was limited on Sunday.
It was very limited. Very, very limited. Alec Iremanner, the catch, or what should have been a catch that wasn't challenged. What are your thoughts on that?
Got to know the play. And if Callahan did or didn't know that Iremanner got an elbow in, I thought Paul hit the nail on the head when he asked this question to Callahan. The guy in his ear, Scott, is that his name?
Rob
Scott
Ritterer.
Yeah. Shouldn't he be the one to tell Callahan, hey, like, he got his elbow in. We have the replay up here. He got his elbow in. An elbow equals 2 feet. Isn't it him who got the call wrong?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and that's the thing, because I asked before Pete, because that was a follow-up to my question, because I'm like, hey, what happened to the people that are in your ear that you have up top that are relaying to you whether or not they suggest challenging or not? And that's, I mean, I think that was a full breakdown across the board, not just on Callahan's part. I believe that he's taking more of the blame.
Because he's the guy out in front.
Because he's the guy in front. But, you know, that's a collective, because that's Nick Holtz. That's Tyke Tolbert. That's Bo Hardigree. That's, you know, Bill Callahan is probably the exception to me that's not held up. But everyone else, like, they're at fault there.
No, Callahan's just the guy talking to the media afterwards. And, of course, you know, when you're the head coach, you're going to get a lot of blame. It may not be all his fault, but he certainly plays a role in that as well. He should have known the rule, and he said he did, and I actually don't know what to believe. He kind of tied himself into a pretzel, The guy in his ear definitely should have known what the correct call was and what the rule was.
Well, I tell you what. Here is what the guy who made the catch had to say. Check this out from Alec Iremanner.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I ran the route and caught it, like contested catch. I would have liked to see, like, a PI on that. I thought he might have been a little bit
early. Hey, listen, I'm with you on that.
But, yeah, obviously they didn't challenge. But, like, hindsight is, you know, you have perfect vision in hindsight. It's 2020. And so it's sure, like, people want to say, like, oh, we should have challenged it. We should have done this. But, like, in the moment, you know, like, it's easy for everybody else to be brave from a safe distance. But, like, when you're really in it, like, it's different.
So you heard it right there. He's like, hey, man, you know, I felt like there was a little bit of contact in there. And I agree, as you heard me in the interaction, you know, when you look at that, the way it happened, I thought that was face guarding initially. And he did kind of push him out before the ball even got there. But, hey, look, we understand what it is. Sometimes you're going to get calls. Sometimes you're not. You got to make the play, and I felt like Iremanner did it.
And he felt like he got an elbow in. I just don't understand. It was just a lack of communication, a lack of understanding. It was all just a whole debacle, but it's been talked about this whole week.
Yeah. Well, look, let's move on to other things, because we kind of overlooked the defense. Jarvis Brownlee Jr., obviously we know what happened. And it's interesting, because that final – pass interference that he had, or illegal hands, whatever it was. I don't know that that's – I mean, look, as a receiver, if you initiate contact, like, what do you expect Jarvis to do? Like, hey, man, you know, here's the nine. Go ahead and smack it. Yeah, smack the nine on my jersey. Like, you have to be able to respond to contact when it's brought to you. But whatever. I think at the same time, we need to talk about the front end and the back end really helping each other, and that's something that I asked. As a matter of fact, I'm not going to talk about it. Let's let Xavier Woods.
It go hand in hand. The rush has to pass the coverage, and the coverage has to rush. Just having a guy back there that can speed up the quarterback's timing, it helps us. It helps us a lot. And then as well as us locking down, having great coverage, he can get to the quarterback if you know, he's holding the ball back there. But those two go hand in hand, rush and coverage.
So as you heard what he said, you know, there are guys that can make things easier for the secondary, and the secondary, there are guys that can make things easier for the front end. And Legarius Sneed, a lot of conversation about him, right, Parker? And I think when you look at Sneed, you know, he said he wanted to play more. I understand what they're saying as far as protecting a player from himself, and they don't want to sacrifice extra snaps in week one for a soft tissue injury. That makes sense. Now, I'm not going to say Sneed played top-level football when he was out there, but I thought he played solid. And obviously he had the pass breakup. But in the one that the front-end part that I had mentioned, Jeffrey Simmons, you know, Jeff played an outstanding game, by the way. But his strip sack, that doesn't happen if Sneed doesn't put the clamps on Courtland Sutton running that route. Because as Bo Nix drops back, if you watch the end zone copy of it, as he drops back, you see his head looking towards the right. And then you see it like, and then it turns because he wanted to get the ball to his number one target. But Sneed said, no, that's not happening. This play, Jeff got home. But then on the back side of that, right, Xavier Woods, and that's why I asked him the question, because his diving interception, that happened because Simmons got pressure. And Lord have mercy, he was getting violated. I don't know why they didn't call holding, because he split the double team, which is something that we know has been a theme for people expecting from him. He did it, and he got the pressure and led to the interception.
You can tell the weight Jeff lost over the offseason certainly helped, because he played such a great game. Yeah. And I feel like a lot of people in the media see that last penalty that he got where he pushed Cody Barton into the Broncos player and got flagged for it.
Yeah.
And I feel like that kind of tarnishes his performance from a 50,000 point view. But Jeff really played well. He was able to split the double teams. That was a big point of emphasis. He was able to get to the quarterback. He's able to get pressures. And he did get some help from the back end. Legarius Sneed, I'm not expecting the Legarius Sneed of old. But when he was out there for his 21 plays, I think he was out there on the field, he looked good. And I remember specifically he had a pass breakup on Courtland Sutton.
On that slant.
Yep. And yeah. I'm like, man, that gives me flashbacks of the Legarius Sneed of old.
Yeah.
And if he can play like a top 20 corner, I think that helps it's the huge. Secondary so much.
It's huge for them. It's huge. So, look, they're going to have a big task ahead of them going against the Rams next week. And we'll get into that a little bit later with Sarah Barship. We're going to go ahead and go to a break. Before we do, I want to shout out Jeffrey Simmons while we're talking about him, because he, along with the Music City Bass Fishing Team and Big Brothers and Big Sisters, they had a great event over at Cedar Creek, and they went fishing, and he fed the group and everything. It was pretty dope. I got to go out there. My daughter came with me, too. And, hey, Parker, she caught, man, this rascal, my Devin, she's 17. That joker was probably... I mean, like, yeah, it was like Shaq, the size of Shaq's shoe, man. Like, we talking 20, 24 inches.
She's already caught more fish than me in my entire life.
Hey,
look at that.
She caught two that day, too, so shout out to them. So, yeah, we're going to go ahead and go to a break. We'll be right back.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
All right, here we go, coming to you live from Utah. Now starting at power forward for your Jazz, out of NC State, number 41, Thurl Bailey.
And now, starring for the Denver Nuggets, Maha City, T.R. Dunn.
Mile High City it is. Well, yeah. He had the Mile High mishap.
I know,
what
man.
What is a catch? What is not a catch?
Yes. Yeah.
Give me your take on Brian Callahan's decision not to challenge and his reasoning and his comments afterward.
Yeah, but see, here's the thing, TD. A lot of people don't understand. When you're wearing the headsets, the coaches are communicating with it. I know everybody wants to put on Brian Callahan. Absolutely, he's a head coach. But there's different guys on the headsets to tell him, hey, coach, you need to challenge this. His arm was down or whatever it was. So I think that it's not just Callahan's fault. I think it's all over across the board to where the guys are responsible to making sure their coaches notify the coach, you need to challenge it. And I think that was the fault also.
Yeah, that's definitely a good point. And I think when you look at that, right, there's things that have to happen. You got to have people in place that serve as the checks and balances, you know?
Yep.
And I think, you know, in this case, like, you got Rob Ritterer, who, you know, is the guy that's up there. He's, in essence, for those who don't understand, you know, he's Mike Vrabel's he's Brian Callahan's stretch, like Mike Vrabel had to help him. So, you know, when you're coming up short in those situations, it's bad business, and that's exactly, you know, what they ran into. And it could have been a big play. You know, you're talking about getting into plus territory on a first and 20.
Yeah, I mean, because everybody's got to be on the same page. I think that we tell, you know, all the players to be accountable. Like, say if I got to run a 10-yard curl, I got to go 10 yards. I can't go 9 yards. Say I got to block the 9 technique, I got to make sure I block them with the great technique. And I think that all the coaches need to be on the same pace where, okay, I need to do my job. I need to make sure that you know, even though coach, he's a head coach and he's taking care of so many things, everybody's got to be on the same page. And you just had a situation – you know, in the game to where nobody was on the same page. It was like, okay, I'll get to it. I guess nobody hasn't looked at it, and we're just going to go on. Because you got to understand something, that when you're in the NFL and you have a chance to score, you got to make sure you score, because in the league, it's kind of hard to get touchdowns. So I just think that if they would have got that corrected and been on the same page, that could have led to a touchdown or to something even bigger.
Yeah, it was positioning that was ruined. What do you think of the drops? I mean, there are some who count 8 drops.
Yeah.
Some count 3.
Some
count 4, regardless, it was too many.
I just think that when your numbers call, you have to make the play. This is what I don't understand, and I know, you know, situations happen in the NFL, but you haven't dropped that many balls in practice. You haven't dropped that many balls in OTA. You haven't dropped that many passes in the preseason. But then when you get to a game, when the game's on the line and you have to make that play and you run like a short dig and you can't come up with the play, it comes a concern to where can you make the play when it counts. Anybody can make it when it's easy. Anybody can make it when the game is not on the line. But when it's a tough catch in a tough environment, you got to be a tough player to make the tough catch. So, you know, I know everybody's, you know, blaming, you know, a lot of other things. But at the end of the day, if I'm a receiver, I have to come up the big catch. Why? To help my quarterback and make him feel comfortable.
Well, that's the big thing, helping the quarterback. And that's what I feel didn't happen. I asked Brian Callahan about that, you know, and he said that they're definitely, the timing was right on those. And, you know, there are passes that those guys were surely – like to have back, but at the same time, at some point, like, you've got to help your rookie quarterback.
I mean, you have to help him because you're already going into a hostile environment. He's going to be a little nervous, and he's going to make some plays to where you got to make the play. But as a wide receiver, I have to help my quarterback. I just remember when I think it was Mac's second year in the NFL, and I think we were playing the Buffalo. I think it was the Buffalo Bills. I can't remember. But I was running a post, right, and a safety stayed over top, as opposed to just continuing on my route. I had to break it off and get into a position to where the quarterback can see me to help him out when he scrambles. Those are the things that you need to do to help your quarterback. You have to help him, because if he doesn't feel confidence in you or he doesn't feel confidence in the throw, then that's when he's going to make those rookie mistakes. And just watching him overall, I thought he looked kind of composed. He looked very confident. But I just think that as a receiver, as a running back, as a tight end, I don't care who it is, you got to help your quarterback by making the play when your number's called.
Yeah, and that's the main thing. When your number's called, make the play. And I think Okonkwo, you know, he had an opportunity. That ball looked like it got on him a little fast on that last series. I think it was 3rd and 10, and he wasn't able to catch it. And that was after Ridley had the egregious drop. So I guess let's start with Okonkwo and that play. And it's kind of that same area. That's where Ridley had it drop. Do you think the timing, like from your perspective, looking at it, was the timing there? Is that something that, you know, takes an adjustment per quarterback as far as how the timing works and how the ball gets up on you?
But see, the timing was there. I mean, it's like if you look at some of the great quarterbacks in the league, they don't throw the ball when he's open. They throw it, he anticipates him getting open. And I know the ball's going to be on top of him quick. I understand that. But that's why you work in OTAs. That's why you work in the offseason to make sure you do those things, because you got to understand some things, that when you get into a regular season game, the speed changes. I know you're doing 7-on-7, and that's great, and not really participating, you know, in the offseason. But when you get into the end season, when you have those games, the speed, you know, intensifies even more. So as a receiver, as a quarterback, I got to make sure the time is great. How do I make sure the time is great? As a wide receiver, I got to get my head around quicker because the ball's coming out faster. And as a quarterback, I got to throw him not when he's open, when he's about to get open. So those are the timing things that they can work on. But here's the great thing about the whole thing, TD. It's correctable. Yeah. It's very, very correctable. When's the last time we really saw Kevin really drop a lot of balls? We haven't. So if he makes those plays, we might have a different outcome in this Bronco game.
Yeah, well, you know, I hate to use the word if, but at the same time, these are things that have to be corrected. What if that were your receiver group? What?
You know, I think for me, TD, this is what I did. When my receivers, because one time my receivers had a bad game. So what I had to do when they had a bad game is I went back to the basics. When I say go back to the basics, it's just working things at the top of the route, getting their head around, lying with their eyes, and making sure that, you know, they catch it with their eyes and not their hands. And those are the things that we worked on and things to get better and just build up the confidence back up in Calvin Ridley. I know Calvin Ridley doesn't shy away from a lot of not having confidence, but sometimes when you drop a ball, you kind of lose a little bit of confidence. So what I would do is get back on the jug machine, do things at the top of the route, do some drills to make sure they get the head around and make sure they feel comfortable in catching the football. And that's all it is. It's a confidence thing.
That is something. But to your point, like with Ridley, he's an emotional guy, right? And when you have somebody like that, you got to get them involved early, and you got to make sure that they move on from a bad play, because you could tell it was kind of keying in on him. You know what I mean? Especially after the second drop, you know, you see him kind of look at his hands and clap his hands, and it's like, you got to keep that from spiraling.
And, you know, TD, as a coach, like Coach Tolbert, I think this is what I would do, and this is what I do with my receivers all the time if they had a bad game, is I would take a walk with them, you know, and I walk with them around the field and say, you know what, let's don't talk about football. Let's just talk about life, how you doing, what's going on. And then after we take one lap, the second lap, now we talk about football. Hey, man, I tell them, dude, you got great hands. You've been in this position before. You got the ability. We already know that because we wouldn't have drafted you. We wouldn't have brought you in to remind him of what he is. And I think that as a coach, when a player has a bad game, what do? You remind them of who they are. That's just how you got to the point. You dig the jug machines. You caught every pass. Just go back and do it. So what, you dropped the pass? Let's go back and do this thing. And that's how you build up your player.
What do you make of these calls, right? It seemed like Riley Moss was able to get very physical with Alec Iermanner, but Jarvis Bradley Jr. was barely able to touch.
I know.
Courtland Sutton. I'm just trying to understand how the playing field was even. You know, I'm never one to say, hey, one team was cheating or anything like that, but I just don't think the game was called the same for
it wasn't,
because it looked like there was more contact from the Broncos DBs than from Brownlee Jr.
They were. I mean, it is tough because I don't think it was a fair playing field either. And I'll never disrespect the umpire, but I mean, Brownlee got three penalties and they really didn't get any penalties. I just think that, you know, it all depends on what the ref is looking for. If he goes before the game and talks to the ref and say, man, you know, Brownlee's a guy who puts his hands on you and tries to grab you, then that referee is going to look at that. So maybe us receivers, the Tennessee Titans, need to go to the ref and say, okay, we got a DB that's with the Los Angeles Chargers. He's consistently grabbing, he consistently holds. Now the ref is looking at that. So if he sees anything that's kind of close to that, he's going to call it. So maybe that's what happened and maybe that's what not happened. But at the end of the day, you got to have the same playing field from the Broncos to the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, I think it has to be uniform, and you didn't really see that much in that. So that was a problem. Look at the Iermanner, the one where it wasn't challenged. He got the elbow in. Do you feel Moss got to him early?
I mean, it's close because it's a bang bang play. I mean, if I'm a ref, I'm going to call it because you know, even if it's close, I'm going to make sure it's tied to the runner or whatever it is. But I just think that, you know, this is just my opinion. I know it's close and whatever, but as a receiver, It starts with the receiver. I need to create more separation. I don't even want him close. I don't even want him even in my vicinity. So, yeah, it probably was a bad call, but at the end of the day, the receiver needs to create more separation to where it's not even close. So I look at it that way. I know it's a different way to actually look at it. Create some more separation, yeah. And you can avoid that.
Yeah, as a receiver, you do want to create more separation. I agree. But, I mean, you know, it's the league, right?
Yeah, it's
the
league.
Guys are going to be able to close. Guys are going to run with you. Yep. Riley Morris is, you know, he's a sprinter. He's a very good yeah. athlete. So he's there. But, you know, I just think that he got the two hands on Iron Manor and start to actually push him out of bounds before he even made the catch.
It is, and you're probably right on that call, and they should have called it. And just like you said, it's got to be on the same playing field. But at the end of the day, you know, it's one of those bang-bang plays to where, in my opinion, even though it's a pass interference, you know, he's still got to make that play or whatever it takes to make sure that situation happen. Because, as a receiver, I mean, you're going to get pushed. You're going to get touched. You remember back in the day when I went against Dale Carter and I went against, you know, a lot of great defensive backs. Man, they are hanging on you. They are trying to tear your shoulder pads off. Yeah. So you just got to get it in your mind that even if the ref doesn't call it, I still got to make that play.
No, without a doubt. So I think when you look at Brian Callahan,
yes.
What's your grade? What's your assessment on his performance?
I would give it maybe a C, and the reason why I give it a C is
C. Okay.
a situation, and I say it in a respectful way. I just think that, you know, what really hurt him is right before the halftime. I think you have 40 seconds left on the clock, and you're deep in your territory, and you run the ball. I think you run the ball twice. And then you give them good field position, and then they score a touchdown. That's kind of mind-boggling to me. Just take a knee, go in, you're up at halftime, and then, situations can happen. It might have been a different outcome. So I just think that right before the half was just a bad, bad sequence of plays.
They didn't run the ball once. It's just amazing to me.
That's what it is. Yeah.
If you run the ball twice, okay, I get it. You want them to burn their timeouts, whatever.
Yeah.
They didn't run it once.
You got to run
Three
it. You got to.
And this was after, and this is why I asked. Like, you said you were wanting to be aggressive. On your own 7-yard line with 47 seconds left, but why not have that same aggressive approach?
After you get
three turnovers and plus territory.
Yeah, but it's the time when to be aggressive. I mean, you got an aggressive defense. You know, you're on your 7 or 8 yard line. That's not a time. You're going to get your quarterback killed. I mean, you really are.
Exactly.
Because
they put him in a third and 10 from his own 7 yard line.
See, that doesn't. I mean, you're putting your quarterback in a bad position because now, you know, he has the press to make the perfect play. I mean, you see what I'm saying? When you're pressed to make the perfect play against an aggressive defense, you're going to get your quarterback killed. And there was a little close margin to where that could have one of those plays could have been a safety. You know what
I'm
saying?
Last one could have been a safety. Yeah.
You just got to be smart and forget about being aggressive. Just be a smart coach. I'm not saying he's the dumb coach. I'm saying smart as of X and O's. Just put your knee down or run the ball and do what you need to do.
And that's why I say be aggressive in that situation, but not getting the ball in plus territory. I don't understand the lack of aggression there. In fact, I looked it up. They have four turnovers, 6 points off.
Right,
I know,
right.
Three
right.
of the four times they got the turnovers, they ran the ball immediately. Like, why not? Hey, we got momentum. Let's
right, play absolutely.
Action, take a shot. Like, those are the types of things.
Yeah.
You want to see a team do, and they failed to do it.
Yeah, but see, you got to look at it overall. Also, you got a rookie quarterback that's never been. I know he's been in this situation in Miami, but the pros are a little bit different. You got a rookie quarterback, and you got an offensive line that's had shaky pass pro. Why would you put your quarterback in that position? And it's just I don't understand it. I just give the ball to Pollard. You know, get the timeouts and go in halftime. You know, up by three. Those are the things you got to look at. Understand the aggressiveness. Understand you want to do that, but you got to know when to be aggressive and not to be aggressive. That's where I have a problem with.
Yeah, and somebody didn't get their keyword to trigger them to that they were on the screen on that second play because you had three receivers or three pass catchers because Chig came in motion.
Right.
Tyler Lockett upfield and Ridley upfield. I don't know what happened. You can, like Ward said, they can't. They're not going to trip on it. But man, yeah. You can't allow these things to snowball because this Rams team, they'll get up on you quickly.
Yeah, and you know what else that I kind of struggle with too is I mean they need to put the ball downfield more. I mean this is just me personally. I mean you got Ridley, they had 4 for 29. You had Elliott 2 for 13. You had Lockett that had 0 catches. The longest play in the passing was to Pollard for 29 yards. They need to push the ball downfield, and I understand they had a couple of drops. But I want to see somebody take the top off the defense. I want to see somebody run a straight go route and let's make something happen. I just think that maybe to push the ball down the field to put some pressure on that secondary.
Yeah, and to that point, like I said, taking shots off of play action.
Exactly. I mean, where's Elliott that can run those crossing routes? I mean, where's DK that can run those crossing routes? Those deep crossing routes. Yeah. I mean, those are still big shots.
I'll give him that.
100%. So, I mean, but here's the thing, you know, it's still correctable, TD. These are things that you can correct as a coach. Catching the ball, you correct, you know, knowing time of possession, you can correct, but you can't correct if guys are doing the same thing week in and week out. So it's got to change this week or you don't want that thing to have a snowball effect.
We get out of here, just your take on Puka Nacua, Davante Adams. What are the Titans looking at here?
Ooh, they better double coverage him. I mean, but I like the other receiver. I can't pronounce his name. Is it Puka?
Yeah, that's what I said. Puka Nacua and Devontae.
Yeah. I mean, no, those guys are good, and those guys are route runners, and those guys know how to find the void in the defense. So I think the secondary is going to have a good task, and you got Stafford, who's a veteran quarterback that are going to make sure these guys are in position to get open. I know Davante Adams, I think he caught 5 for 41 last week. You had Puka that had, I think he had over 131 yards. So, you know, it's going to be a big task for these guys. But I think for the Tennessee Titans to go to beat the Rams, they're going to have to score some points. You can't be in the red zone last week. They were in the red zone on the 15, the 17, the 24, the 32, the 39, and you come up with 4 field goals. You can't do that against the Rams because the Rams are going to score points. And I think for the Tennessee Titans to win, they're going to have to score 7 as opposed to getting 3.
There you have it right there. Appreciate it. We'll be back next week to talk more shop. Maybe it'll be a win. We'll see.
This is Jefferson. I'm talking with TD.
All right, back from the break, talking with TD. You hear the music, LA, Big City of Dreams. That's who the Titans have coming, the Los Angeles Rams. And you guys may have heard her a time or two when she was covering the Houston Texans, but now, you know, she did the coast-to-coast thing, and she's out there on the West Coast. We're going to bring in my homie, Sarah Barship, ESPN NFL Nation Rams reporter. Sarah, what's going on?
Not much. I tell you, I was so excited when I saw this came up on the schedule, this rotation this season.
Yeah, for sure. Everybody loves coming to Nashville. I get it. I guess before we get into all that, what's your favorite thing about coming to the city? Why did it excite you?
Such a fun place to walk around, and I love just being able to stop in any bar, any restaurant. You know, you're going to hear some good music and just have a cool vibe, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's definitely a dope city. Absolutely, I could attest to that. But you're out there in L.A., and you're doing a great job. It's been cool seeing you go out there and take command of the beat the way that you have. I want to start on the injuries, just – apparently, the both in interior linemen, Steve Avila, I believe I pronounced it correctly. He's a guy I really liked coming out of college. But what's the latest that you've heard on those guys and their status?
Yep, both Sean McVay just told us both Steve and Kevin Dotson, neither of them will practice today. He said that doesn't mean he's ruling them out on Sunday against the Titans. They won't be out there today. And then Rob Havenstein, also dealing with a little bit of an ankle injury. He called it more of a veteran rest day, and he expects Rob will be ready to go tomorrow during practice, but certainly not what you want, you know, going into this game.
Oh, so that could be 3 of the 5 that are dealing with something, huh?
Yep.
Wow. That's going to be a tough sledding right there. I want to stay on the offense and Puka Nacua. So he's actually – I do my whiteboard videos, and I drew up how Sean McVay, he uses the motion to get leverage and to also to create matchups and positioning. And I know he does that with Puka Nacua, but I mean, just from your time there, like, what is it that makes him such a good receiver? I know you wrote about his importance to the Rams.
Yeah, it's that physicality and that toughness, which I think was so clear and on display on Sunday against the Texans. He's not shy about, you know, being the person to make a hit if he has to on the game, but also like in what he does in the run game. And we just talked to Sean McVay about that. He was praising Puka and he said, yeah, I mean, some of the catches and the route running he's doing this year are really good, but also just what the blocking he did, I believe, on Kyren Williams' touchdown and a couple other times. It's something that they've seen his first two seasons and again now. And it's been fun to watch him and just kind of see the reaction from his teammates when he comes back into the game after getting stitches on Sunday, his blood running down his face, and he runs back out there. And Sean McVay said you could feel that immediate presence from him.
Yeah, and the thing that's so interesting is he's not the biggest, the fastest, the strongest, but he gets the job done. From what you've seen, like, is it just that it's the toughness, the willingness to do whatever?
Yeah, that's it. The willingness, I mean, just the amount of work he was willing to do, I think, in blocking. Like, I'm sure you know, like, in Sean McVay's offense, if you're going to block, you're going to get the ball, too. It's the same thing, the reason Cooper Kupp was so successful here. And so Puka learned from Cooper, came in here, and you can tell he adopted that mindset. And I think you've just seen him grow as a receiver now in his third year. But yeah, if you ask anyone, any of his teammates, anyone who watched the game, they'll tell you that toughness goes a long way here.
Yeah, absolutely. And then Davante Adams, how have they gotten him in the mix? We know he's an outstanding player.
Yeah, Sean McVay, it seemed like he was really enjoying talking to us about what it's like to have those two receivers. Obviously, because Matthew Stafford missed so much time during training camp with his back injury, they didn't really have that group on the field for together as long as they would have wanted or for as many reps as they would have wanted. But you could see kind of Matthew and Devontae's chemistry build as they got those reps towards the end of camp. And then I think you could see it by the second half of the game on Sunday, just kind of that build. And I mean, both Matthew and Sean were smiling, talking about the kind of route runner Devontae is and how good he is at that. And, you know, Sean McVay is enjoying having both of those weapons available for him on Sunday.
For sure. And we're talking to ESPN NFL Nation Rams reporter Sarah Barship. Sarah, you have the blessing of being able to, you know, interact and watch a guy who's probably going to be in the Hall of Fame one day in Matthew Stafford. What would you say is the most interesting thing that you've gathered from just interacting and covering a guy like that?
I just think it's his mind. And, you know, a lot of his teammates talk about how underrated he is as a quarterback. And I think Cooper Kupp told me last year it probably comes from him playing for Detroit for so long and them not having playoff success. But what he did so consistently there. And when you talk to his teammates here, it's just his ability to diagnose coverages so quickly, just how quickly he can do that, but also how precise he is. And we talked about, I don't know if you saw that no-look pass he had, a pass to Puka Nacua on Sunday, but he was enjoying talking about that. And he said, you know, I don't go into the huddle thinking I'm going to throw the no-look pass, but he had a big smile on his face as he was describing it, and Sean McVay did too.
It's really interesting how those things, like for those elite athletes, like it just happens. It's not like they, as you mentioned, they don't go in saying, hey, you know, I'm going to look to the left and throw to the right or anything like that. It happens. And I think that's what's really fun about this game. You know, and when you talk about elite athletes to flip it to the other side, this guy, Jarrett Verse, I mean, first off, tell me a little bit about his workouts with a Hall of Famer, absolutely, to be an Aaron Donald.
Yeah, I don't know that I've ever laughed so much in a press conference hearing this story as I did hearing the story be told, but I believe he was on Adam Schefter's podcast, and I think Adam said, hey, do you ever work out with Aaron Donald? And he said no, and I think he called it an old man workout. And, well, Aaron Donald saw that and challenged him to a workout, and Jared was telling the story of going to his house, and they go through these sets, and he's just like, okay, it's over. And Aaron was like, okay, that was the warm-up. Let's get to the actual workout. And Jared was just like, what did I get myself into? And he has said multiple times since then, like, I already knew why Aaron Donald was so good, but after going through that workout, I really understand why he had so much success.
We all know the story of he and Braden Fisk, how those guys were reunited. How have you seen that relationship just blossom? And obviously, you can't replace Aaron Donald, but how do you feel that they've done as far as not making his retirement a huge detriment to the team?
Yeah, there are not too many teams that can go from Aaron Donald retiring and then have this front of Kobe Turner, Byron Young, Jared Verse, Braden Fisk, just some really young, talented players up there. You know, with you talk about Fisk and Verse, totally different personalities. Braden Fisk is a lot quieter. Jared Verse, if you are in the same building as him, you can probably hear him. His teammates, I mean, I think Cooper Kupp told me last year, like, I've never heard anyone talk as loudly and as much as Jared Verse. But his teammates love it, and they thrive off of it. It's fun to watch him. There was a mic'd up last year where against the Vikings where, you know, really they showed off just the amount of trash talking he does, and that was fun to watch. But Byron Young told me that Verse is the battery of this team. And, oh, by the way, he's very good at football too. So yeah. No surprise, the 2024 Defensive Rookie of the Year, but I'm interested to see how much better he can get this year as he continues to grow.
And what about Larrell Murchison? I know he has the munching with Mertz. I'm not sure if you've seen that. He travels the city and he goes to the different food places. Have you seen that?
I have not seen that, but I know what I'm doing after we're done with this interview now.
Yeah,
So out of the locker room.
So Murchison is a former Titan. He was drafted, I believe, fifth round out of NC State. But on his IG, it's called Munching with Merch. And sometimes he brings teammates, but a lot of times it's he and Tierre Tart. So maybe you and Chris Rim could combine and do a story. Tart plays for the Chargers. But, yeah, that's pretty cool. I want to spin it back to the game coming up this week. As you've talked to the guys, and I know you haven't had many opportunities. We're early in the week, but what do you think is going to keep them from overlooking this game against a lowly Titans team and having their eyes on the Eagles? Because that's obviously a bigger test.
Yeah, I think if anything, with the slow starts the Rams have gotten off to the last 2 years, I don't think they're in a position that they're overlooking anyone. But I was hearing Matthew Stafford describe how tough this defense is and kind of the not mean streak, but just like the aggressiveness they play with. And so didn't sound like someone who was overlooking them. And I know they just faced a really tough Texans defense, a very physical team, and it sounds like they're expecting something similar against the Titans.
Really interesting. Chase Blackburn, he's also the special teams coordinator. He spent some time here, so there's a lot of familiarity. I want to ask you about Sean McVay, because you look at anybody that's been on an elevator with him. You're a head coaching candidate. How has he just been, from what you've seen, just establishing the culture and the winning mindset?
Yeah, I think the most fitting example of that was Devontae Adams coming in and talking about how when he asked around the league about what Sean was like as a human, as a coach, he said, every single person said great things. And he said, I don't know that I've ever heard that before. For everyone to agree that the culture that Sean has built and the way he coaches and runs this organization, for Devontae Adams to come in to say that, I think was kind of, not that we didn't know it, but to hear him say it, he's been quite a few places. I think that really stood out to me. And then you look at these assistant coaches who have had so much success and coordinators under him and have gone elsewhere. He really believes in pouring into coaches and players, and in the same way that he was poured into when he was a young coach and young coordinator. So I think that it always starts at the top. You know, how a head coach, his mindset affects the entire building, and I think that's so true here in LA.
Yeah, no, that's a great point about the mindset. And you definitely could see, because you always see him clapping and you always see him talking it up. That energy that we see on the different shows and stuff like that, is he always on? Is that how it always is?
Yes, although you know what, I think he's talked about kind of the perspective since becoming a father, since going through the tough 2022 season that he's gotten, and realizing like, yes, this is so important to him, but there are other important things too, and you never want to overlook that. So I think we're seeing a more balanced Sean McVay, although he jokes all the time about, you know, you until you're in that moment and you kind of forget. You want to control it. You want to be the best at what you're doing. But yeah, I would say being always on is a good way to describe him.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. We're talking to ESPN NFL Nation Rams reporter Sarah Barshep. Sarah, before we get you out of here, just two quick ones on Matthew Stafford. The back, how was he coming out of that Texans game, and what do you think he's going to be dealing with going into this Titans one?
He said today that he was really pleased with how he recovered. I mean, talk before practice. So a couple of days after the game, obviously isn't getting hit during the week, but he said because he's wearing the red jersey all of camp, it's really, you take your first hits in week one and your body kind of remembers like, oh, that's what that feels like. But he said he feels good. I'm sure it's something he and the team will be managing this season. But he said you can't be out there thinking about it, and that he's going to play like he always does, and that seems like that's going to be his mindset this season.
Okay, there you have it right there. And then the last one, he and Brian Callahan spent a lot of time together in Detroit. Did he speak about Callahan at all in his press conference when he spoke to you guys?
He didn't.
Okay. So we asked Callahan about it, and he spoke glowingly about Stafford, so I wasn't sure if anybody asks, but it's all good. I'm assuming they'll speak this week, that's for sure, before or after the game at some point, since they spent so much time. So hey, I appreciate you coming on. I know that the time difference it could make for a tough scheduling, so thanks for making an adjustment and coming on with us.
Of course, looking forward to seeing you on Sunday.
Absolutely, and let me know if you need anything when you touch down in the city.
Appreciate it.
All right. So that was Sarah Barshep talking shop, man. I always like getting a chance to discuss things with her. Really cool young lady out there in L.A. I appreciate her coming on. Appreciate Chris Sanders making it happen. Parker Kelly. We had some good conversations, man. This was a great show. Definitely appreciate each of you for tuning in. Make sure you continue rocking with us, man. It's a home game. You heard Cam Ward. He said he's looking forward to seeing a packed Nissan Stadium. We'll see. Oh, and before we get out of here, definitely Parker got the tour, the new Nissan Stadium, what's going up with it. And, man, there are a lot of things that people are going to really love. It's a vertical stadium. It's like they kind of tailored it after the Colosseum back in Rome, and they want to make the guys feel like they're in that setting. And wait till you see it. You're going to feel that way. Yeah.
I was so jealous I wasn't there.
Yeah, man, yeah, man.
Wait.
It was a great tour. I have some different videos and stuff on my X and my IG, so check those out. But until then, we, like I said, appreciate each of you. Make sure you check us out on Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes, anywhere you get your fine listening materials. Search Talking with TD. Subscribe, rate, review. We appreciate it.